Do you own a music collection anymore, or do you just download it? What about your movies, even your books? Gone are the days that you could walk into someone's house, marvel at their CD collection or bookshelf, as more and more of us opt for subscribing over owning things. So is this the way of the future? Let's ask our resident futurist, Steve Sammartino. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Kaya.
Are we letting go of physical things?
Yeah, I think we are. I think in the future, we won't own anything. We're moving very quickly to a subscription world where we tap in to have more, have everything available, but we won't own anything really.
It's funny because I was thinking about this just on the weekend, because every year I like to buy the Eurovision album so that I have that each and every year. For the last few years, I've done it on iTunes, but of course iTunes is done now, and without an Apple Music subscription you can't actually have access to a CD. It's not a CD that ends up on the other streaming services. So what's a girl to do, Steve? Am I just no longer able to buy this CD in any form?
Yeah, I think the profit incentive of software firms has taken over. They've got this thing, they haven't got a name for it, they call it monthly recurring revenues. See, they don't want your money once, they want it every month. They want to say, every month I can rely on Kaya, she's got a $10 or a $30 subscription happening, and they would rather give you access to a million songs, which you obviously can't listen to anyway. Who's got time to listen to a million songs, right? But they would rather have you pay every single month and lock you in so they know how much money they're getting from you. And look, the internet and software, it makes it possible.
Yeah, because I guess that makes sense. My $30 a month is better than my $30 a year.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely. And it's the same with entertainment too. So, you know, Netflix, they have you for the $15 a month, or Foxtel, or anything that is digital now is becoming subscription. But a lot of things that we used to own, music, software, even the maps on your phone, you used to go out and buy a Gregory's or a Melway's or, you know, wherever you're from. But now you just access Google's map on the phone. You access the news on your phone. You don't buy a newspaper anymore. Books that you access on your Kindle, you don't really own them. Even when you buy it, you really don't own it.
Do you think that where we are right now, where even libraries can't really loan books at the moment, that we are going to see this speed up a little bit?
So it's interesting. So you can get ebooks from libraries. That's still possible. I've written 3 books, so I know that how that works, and you get like some royalties from how many times your book gets lent out.
Yeah.
So you do actually do that. It's still quite good. But the thing is that in the future, pretty much anything that has got software inside it means that you don't really own it even when you buy it. Because if you buy a song on iTunes or you get a book through Kindle, if you bought that book on Kindle, you can't take that book and put it on your Mac computer or your Hewlett-Packard computer, because it's licensed to the software that Amazon owns. So even when you buy something that is digital, you're really only getting what they call a permanent license. So you've got a license to use it. But the real problem is you don't have transferability. You can't take it from one smartphone or one computer and take it to a different brand, because it won't work.
Mm.
Because it's been designed to be locked in. They call it a lock-in. So it's locked into that device or hardware that you've got, because it's got software inside it. And one of the interesting things is that it starts with entertainment, but it's actually going to happen to all of the physical things around us. So even your car, you will buy a car and you don't really own it, because it won't work without the software that's inside the cars these days. Because cars aren't cars. Cars are now rolling computers.
Which, you know, anytime something breaks, the smallest thing breaks and it means a whole computer upgrade.
Yeah, no, that's right. And so I don't know if you've seen your car get serviced these days. I don't know what the mechanics do now. I think they plug it into a USB, go have a cup of coffee, because they plug the cars into machines these days. There's not that much grease there. And as cars become electric, they'll become more that way. And even with fixing it, like when you get a tractor, so John Deere tractors, you're actually not even legally allowed to fix it yourself now. So if you're a farmer who's got a John Deere tractor, you have to get the John Deere service person to come out and fix your tractor. It's actually illegal for you to touch it.
Which is kind of smart from a business perspective, because what that is doing is making sure that you have to go back to them. So when it needs to be fixed, when it needs to be serviced, when you need a new part, you are going back to the software owner.
Yeah, that's right. So from a business perspective, if you're a shareholder in John Deere or Apple or any of these guys, this idea of using lock-in is what they want. And actually, there was a law that was passed in 1998 called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And what that means is that software is copyright, just like a book or a music or whatever. So software, they're saying, is like a form of copyright, which means that you're not allowed to manipulate it or touch it. And they use that law so that you can't take the software and put it onto another device because it's an infringement of copyright. That's how they get away with it. So it's a really smart strategy for the businesses, but it actually isn't. It seems almost unconscionable for us as consumers that we buy something, but we kind of don't really own it. And now that everything you buy, whether it's a car or a scooter or anything, they've all got software and computational ability inside them. So it's sort of in the real world, it's like, we don't really own it. And there's a whole action that's happening in America called the right to repair. And they're going to court and having a war over, well, we should be able to repair something.
Are we happy about this as consumers? Has it sort of happened without us really knowing and we're only just now going, hang on, what? What do you mean I don't own anything?
Yeah, well, you got it in one. Usually when I talk to people, they're saying, what are you talking about? I don't own it. And I'm like, well, Take something that you bought and try and put it on a different computer. You'll see really quick that you don't own it. I mean, even your iPhone or your Android phone, I mean, that only works because it's got the software inside. If you don't upgrade the software, the thing won't work. You haven't really bought it. So I don't think consumers are happy with it, but I think worse than that, I don't think people really know. And so sometimes what happens is things happen by stealth, you know, underneath, and then we realize and go, hey, that's not cool. Look, I'd be really surprised if that law didn't get overturned in the next sort of few years. It's just that it happened in a way where when that law was designed in the late 90s, they didn't know how pervasive software would become. So it's a law that was designed for a world that I don't think they predicted it, how influential software would become. So that's a very long way of saying, Kaya, no, I don't think people are happy with this. But worse, people don't know.
Are there ways to rebel against it? Like, because there are still physical CDs in the world. I just don't want to deal with what that means because I move house a lot.
Yeah, I think, you know, like we saw the comeback with LPs. So the old long player records and vinyl made a super comeback. And in fact, the sales of vinyl have had double-digit growth for about the last 10 years because A, they sound different and people like having physical things. So I think that there'll be a market for items that come back and there'll be bespoke items. So I would be really surprised if we don't have software and phones and people say, hey, this is an open source phone where you can do what you want with the software. You can manipulate it. You can change things. Whatever you buy, you have it. So there'll be a movement that fights against it, a tide that comes back. So I think that'll really happen. But if you're a bit dark and disturbed, there's always the black market, Kaya. So apparently Russian hackers on the internet, they're happy to come and give you some special code that you can hack into your own tractor that you own, yourself. So there's a bit of a black market.
We are having lots of big conversations at the moment as well about the arts and arts funding and how we as lovers of arts, you know, music gets us through great times, literature gets us through great times, hard times, what we can do to be better at consuming that. Do you think that might drive some change? Because we know that those streaming services don't give much back to, say, musicians.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in times like COVID, we've realised the arts aren't just this thing on the side. It's vital to our life and our mental well-being. I mean, think about how we would have survived without access to arts right now. Mm. The problem with this licensing situation is the artists get a lot less. If you sold a million records and you had a hit record, you know, when it was physical music, you would have made, you know, a couple of hundred thousand dollars in the mid-80s. If you have a million downloads on Spotify now, you get about $40, so enough for a couple of pizzas. So the system here suits the people that own the system. It suits the Spotify, the Apple, the Amazon, all of these guys, but it's very unfair on the artists because the artists get a tiny, tiny portion of things when they're digital. And unless we support our artists, the art go away. I mean, that's one thing that we need to understand is it needs to be an economic incentive for people to create art, and artists, you know, they deserve to earn a decent living for the work that they have.
It's eye-opening, and I think it just focuses how we think about where we're putting our money sometimes when it comes to the things that we love.
Yeah, and we've got to push back, and you've got to tell people, you've got to say, hey, guess what I found out? We've got to make things a dinner table conversation, because when they become a dinner table conversation, people talk about it and politicians pay attention. And that's how we create change.
Steve, always great to catch up. We'll do it again in a fortnight. Thank you.
Thanks, Kaya.